Chapter 4, 0959 GMT. Wu Shi, aboard the Lodestone, was, though actually in space, the last of the in-jokes to get the bad news about the sun, courtesy of Mel's call. Although he was the first of the station's three-person crew to be aware of the day's problems. Ironic when he thought about it later. But he didn't listen closely enough to Mel's hurried, bewildering call to take it all in, not at first. He thought, at first, the problem was with the corona, the sun's outer atmosphere. It wasn't by chance that, on this Friday morning, by Mel's and Tasha's time, she had already been gazing at the sun's corona through various monitors, and indeed through a naked-eye window in the wall of the shelter module they all called the observatory. After all, the whole point of the Lodestone, a station nestled behind the Earth in the planet's long shadow cone, was that, in normal operations, you couldn't see the sun at all, or most of it. The Lodestone held its station with the help of a magsail booster, a magnetic trap that caught the wind of charged particles that flowed endlessly from the sun and washed around the Earth, and so harvested a steady, small but useful force. A force that, when balanced with the gravity of sun and Earth, enabled the Lodestone to track Earth precisely and stay within the shadow cone. And thanks to that shadow cone, the station was one of the darkest locations in the solar system, and one of the best for astronomy. Even away from direct sunlight, space telescopes anywhere near the Earth itself could be blinded by the brilliance reflecting from sea and land and ice. What was left of the ice, anyhow. So, in the umbra, there were telescopes working in the deep infrared, seeking elusive traces of ancient radiation. Evidence of the early days of the universe, impossible to capture anywhere else. Big telescopes. The largest of the station's telescopes was called the L-cubed-T, the Lodestone Ludicrously Large Telescope. And, with other sensors, still more elusive phenomena were studied here. Some with instruments sponsored by Jones Inc. itself, the major engineering contractor behind this station, mostly down to the initiative of its mercurial founder and principal shareholder, Serena Jones. The Jones instruments sought traces of dark energy, for instance, the elusive counter-gravity field that seemed to be driving the long-term expansion of the universe itself. And as for the sun, you didn't have to wait for an eclipse. You could see the corona anytime you wanted, by creating artificial eclipses, carefully positioning your instruments so that the sun itself was just hidden by Earth. Yes, Wu Shi knew about the corona, had spent many hours studying it. But today offered a rare opportunity to do just that. For if only for a few minutes, the corona would be visible from two widely separated locations, the Lodestone and the eclipse track on Earth, offering a chance to study the corona's three-dimensional structure. That was the plan, anyhow. The trouble was, at the moment of eclipse, the universe wasn't behaving itself. Just as Mel had warned him, he had already followed that strange darkening sequence, 15 seconds or so, as the corona dissipated, or something eerie, baffling. She ran the record through a few times, looking for clues as to what in hell he was seeing. It was as if the eclipse, impossibly, was going on too long. He wondered how his fiancé, Jim Boyd, was feeling right now. Jim, suspended in space between Mars and Earth, aboard a spacecraft called Almirich, far further away from home than she himself, and in the middle of what seemed like a solar system-scale anomaly. He also wondered what the hell to do. Lodestone was a spoked torus, assembled from over 500 Jones Inc. standard shelter modules, mated end to end, a wheel connected to a central hub via four spokes. The whole assembly rotated once every 50 seconds or so, to provide a semblance of Earth-normal gravity in the outer torus, essential for the health of crew and growing plants alike. The Lodestone contained a life support system that was almost a closed loop, an ecosystem of human beings and crop plants. And the Lodestone, like other modern spacecraft, was able to venture far from the Earth, thanks to the protection of a magshield, a superconducting loop capable of repelling the charged particles of lethal cosmic radiation. The lodestone had been a comfortable place to live and work. Also, fun. But now, here was this anomaly with the corona. She had a feeling of vague dread. He was relieved when he heard a familiar patter of running footsteps, a noise barely muffled from having to travel from a few modules down the chain that made up the main torus of the station. He needed somebody to talk to about this, and the only runner on the ship was Ange Costello, his commander. "Ange, hey, come look. Something's off here." She stopped at the door, breathing hard, pushed a lank of greying hair back from a sweat-streaked forehead, took a swig from a water bottle. She showed the flash of impatience she might have expected. Nobody likes their running routine to be interrupted. But then, this was deep space, and ignoring something off wasn't a viable strategy long-term. She bent down to see over his shoulder. "So what's off? The corona? We see it every day. The fact that it's an eclipse should make no damn difference." That was the irritating side of Ange. She had a habit of second-guessing what you were about to say. "Of course not, duh. But it's different anyhow. Take a look. I've run this through a few times." He glanced at the clock. It was still only a few minutes since scheduled totality. "Watch the timer. Just at the moment of peak eclipse." It was, he knew by now, just what Mel Kapoor had witnessed aboard Skythrust. There was the glorious eclipse corona. But then that peculiar fade-out, starting at the inner edge of the corona to darkness. Ange bent closer. He could smell her sweat, her lycra shirt. "Huh? That is odd. Let's run it again." They watched and chewed the fat and watched some more. "Let's just think about what the corona is," said Ange, solar specialist. And just a tad pompous with it, she thought. She said, "The corona is the sun's outer atmosphere, sparse, but very hot. Hot enough to be visible from Earth. When the disk of sun itself is obscured, energy pumped into it by solar radiation and magnetism. And now, it just faded away. How?" She made a conceptual leap. "But suppose you turned off that flow?" She frowned. "You mean, shadowed out the sunlight somehow? How?" "Never mind. Yeah. If you could, the corona gases would quickly dump their energy in radiation, fading down to infrared pretty fast. But the corona is light seconds across. Therefore, it would take seconds, a perceptible interval, for the last of the sunlight to, wash through. Just as we see in the recording." "Yeah." She looked at him. "So what could block the sunlight from the corona?" This time, no conceptual leap. "I have no idea. Some kind of shield around the sun?" she snorted. "One, a shield around a fusing mass more than 1,000,000 kilometers across, put there in an instant. And two, by shield, do you imply some kind of artifact? We look for natural causes on this boat, Wu, not agency. Not for somebody meddling with heaven. Once, in the Astronautics Academy at Yale, Ange Costello had been his thesis supervisor. Now, all these years later, she was still his thesis supervisor. He might have snapped back about that. But that was when the master alarm sounded." Ange glanced over the control panel in front of Xi, snapped exactly the right switch. The alarm dipped to a whisper. Ange called, "Okay, Harry, you're in the hub." Harry Regent was the third of the three crew. His voice came through clearly. "Doing my shift, checking the readouts." Ange gave him a second to do that. The rule was that, at all times, in case some catastrophe hit, at least one person had to be in the heavily shielded hub, their fallback storm shelter at the centre of the torus. The hub was equipped with slaves of all the major control systems of the habitat, so was a good location to spot an alarm and handle any mishap. Of course people cheated, came out to help with stuff, for a break, just for company, not Harry. Harry was a USAF officer. She imagined him sitting in the hub, upright, every sense alert, monitoring the systems in this anomalous situation, as if he were in some Cold War nuclear silo. That was Captain Harry Regent for you. All fine in here, Harry snapped now. Okay. She. Ange scanned panels of her own. I don't see any reason. I've got it. The cause of the alarm, look here. We're drifting out of position. Only maybe 10 meters a minute, but... That can't be, Ange said. I'm looking at the MagSail telltales right now. Reading exactly as per specification. The sail is thrusting, holding us right where we are supposed to be. Or it thinks it is. She brought up another display, showing the station's position as determined by radar pulses from satellites in Earth orbit, more than 1 million kilometers away. But the position anomaly is mounting up and accelerating. And hey, look at the time record. The problem started just about at the moment of peak eclipse, when the corona started playing up. He felt an echo of that earlier, almost superstitious dread. But that can't be connected, can it? Ange stiffened, almost perceptibly taking on her station commander role. Okay, Harry, stay down in the hole. Make sure everything is copied down to Earth, but stay in the hole. Let's think this through. We're drifting out of position. What holds us in position in the first place? Almost from first principles, she and Ange went through the ship's design logic and systems one by one, looking for the flaw. She knew, as Ange did, that Lodestone was a delicate design, a kind of balance of forces. Strictly speaking, Lodestone was a statite, a satellite held in orbit, not just by the gravity of Sun or Earth or other bodies, but with the aid of artificial propulsion systems. A natural station-keeping location for an observatory like Lodestone might have been at the so-called second Lagrange point of the Earth-Sun system, L2, 1.5 million kilometers from Earth. Once there, a satellite would stay put, or rather it would be swept around the Sun keeping pace with the Earth, thanks to the combined pull of Earth and Sun. And so the venerable James Webb Space Telescope had been stationed there. Indeed, it was still out there somewhere, in a silent orbital museum of its own. But L2 was over 100,000 kilometers outside the Umbra, Earth's cone of shadow. If you wanted to work here, inside the Umbra, in this useful place for astronomy, the L2 gravitational balancing act no longer worked. The gravity fields of Earth and Sun that much closer pulled too hard on the Lodestone, which would soon have drifted out of position. And so the station was attached to a MagSail, a 40-kilometer-wide superconducting hoop whose magnetic field pushed against the solar wind. The steady stream of charged particles that pushed out from the surface of the Sun and which washed around Earth's own magnetic field as if it wasn't there. The MagSail pushed the station outward with the precise force required to compensate for the inward-pulling gravity fields of Earth and Sun, as required to maintain its orbit in the Umbra, keeping in step with the Earth. The MagSail, in fact, had given the station its name. She had been charmed to learn when he had first been assigned to it. In Gulliver's travels, the flying island of Laputa was, implausibly, kept aloft by a lodestone, an immense bar magnet. But right now that delicate balancing act of magnetism and gravity was failing. Anne shook her head, irritated, as she could get when some set of facts made no sense. She glanced over more instrumentation. This can't be right. We only have one active component, the MagSail, and that is working fine. There's nothing to go wrong. She said, let's think it through again. We have three forces in balance. The Sun's gravity is about 600 microg out here. An acceleration of about 600 millionths of Earth's surface gravity. Earth itself contributes 21 microg. And the MagSail should be pushing us outwards, is, at 14 microg, leaving us the balance of 607 microg we need to keep us orbiting as we should be, leaving us the balance of 607 microg we need to keep us orbiting as we should be. Okay, said Ange. And the defect is, Harry? Well, it's pretty big, Harry Regent admitted. Almost 600 microg. She kept his mouth shut, for fear of Ange's reaction if he said the obvious out loud. Let her say it for herself. Which she did, eventually. The defect is the same as the whole of the sun's gravity. That's not possible. She, thinking fast, thinking wildly, he felt, said, Harry, copy me your timings, would you? The loss of the corona and when we started to drift. Thanks. Shit. The timings match. Just like my readings here. We lost the gravity just as the corona started to fade. Got to be some kind of outgassing from the station itself, Ange muttered. Evaporation, paint, giving up its moisture in the cold, got to be. She grinned. He couldn't help it. Paint. Even so, Harry said, more cautiously. Kind of a coincidence that it gave off a thrust that should exactly match our solar supplement. She suspected that Harry was coming to the same conclusion he was, if not Ange. He said cautiously, So it looks like the sun's light switched off. And its gravity, yes? It's almost as if, well, almost as if the sun itself has gone away. A screen flashed orange. Another alert signal. Ange tapped the panel, read the text. Wow, Harry said, evidently looking at a slaved copy in the hub. She was the only one who couldn't see it. What is it? The ground checking up? It's not from the ground, Ange said. It's from deep space. A general broadcast. She looked at Shi. It's from the Al-Mirih. They're in some kind of trouble. Shi tried to think that through. If the sun has gone out of Jim's universe too. He shook his head, unable to think further, to think beyond Jim. Ange rested her hand on his shoulder. We'll figure this out. Come on, let's talk to the ground. On stations like the Lodestone, all of the crew's conversations were routinely recorded, and later it would be determined that nobody on record, anywhere in human space, articulated that hypothesis that the sun itself had vanished at 0948 GMT of that day, earlier than Wu Shi.